Thanks to Ian and Judy for that little time of remembrance at the start. You know, you do come into church, don't you, with these big things on your mind as you come, and often church seems to ignore them, but it was lovely to have that moment of remembrance for the things that are happening in Turkey and Syria today. So thank you for that little moment of centering. Wisdom revealed, design and delight is our topic today. Do you remember when advertising consisted of either a newspaper image, a poster on a wall, or a rather clunky ad on television? It was very clear what was an ad and what was not, and if you didn't like them, you could turn the page or you could turn it off. These days, advertising is much, much harder to detect. One of the most interesting new jobs in our new economy is that of the influencer. An influencer is someone who gets paid to push a product or a service through social media to their friends and contacts. They're engaged by advertisers to spruik a product or a service, and they get paid in either cash or money or in product. Now, people have always influenced others through their recommendations. We always listen to what our friends say about things that are good and things that are not. But the difference these days is social media, which amplifies the messages and spreads them so quickly and so fast on things like Instagram or TikTok or Facebook. Some people have millions and millions of followers, and other influencers, have just a smaller tribe. This example on the screen is a person who's paid by Specsavers to reach her 18,000 followers, influence them about their choice of spectacles. Influencing is very big business. Last week, I spoke to you about the wisdom of Proverbs, those brief and catchy sayings that encapsulate so much of life experience from which we can learn. We learned that Israelite proverbial wisdom had one important feature not seen in other nations' wisdom, Proverbs. To learn wisdom in Israel, you had to have the right disposition to God. Awe, respect, obedience. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We did a little thought exercise last week when we were looking at how Proverbs might help us if we were facing a particular issue question we had to face. I wonder if any of you actually dipped into the book this week and found some wisdom that you took on board for yourself. If you did, I'd be really keen to talk to you about it after the service over a cuppa. But today we're opening up a different part of Proverbs. Now, the book of Proverbs is not just a stack of two-line proverbs all jumbled up together. It also contains some long pieces, short stories, if you like, that give the reader some insight into wisdom. The rather long readings we had today that Phyllis read beautifully to us are two parts of one long passage, one description of woman wisdom. So today we're looking at woman wisdom, design and delight. Advertisers, as we all know, work extremely hard to get our attention and change our buying habits. The world is awash with advertising, the kind we notice and the kind we don't. They spend heaps of money to analyse how we think and what might move us to change our buying habits. They also work on children, we know, relying on children's pester power to provoke adults to buy things. Advertisers are not just after our money, they're after our minds. They want to change attitudes and not just actions. I introduce myself that way, this sermon that way, because I think the book of Proverbs is also trying to sell us something. And that's why the tone of the book sometimes resembles a Bunnings ad. Look at this proverb. Can we have that up on the screen? Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. It's a bit loud, isn't it? A bit frenetic, exhorting the reader not to buy another tool or a piece of garden furniture, but to seek wisdom because it's not going to come naturally. Wisdom must have been a hard sell even in Israel in those days. So the whole book aims to awaken a craving for God, to jolt the readers away from all the other cravings that we have that mimic what God has to offer. Keep hold of instruction, do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. According to Proverbs, there's a lot at stake. Wisdom leads to life. Knowledge without wisdom will in fact kill us, it says. So there's not just a financial bottom line at stake for us, there's our whole lives. When there is so much at stake, special selling techniques must be used here and there. And Proverbs comes up trumps and makes wisdom into a winsome personal character. So if wisdom were a person, what or who would it look like? Judge, maybe, king, perhaps an elder. Well, surprise, surprise, according to Proverbs, wisdom looks like a working woman. There are two beautifully crafted prose poems in Proverbs that tell us about woman wisdom. One is the passage that was read this morning, and the other is at the end of the book. So let's look at the way that woman wisdom describes herself in chapter 8. Like the wandering teachers of the day, woman wisdom is looking for students. On the heights, beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand. Beside the gates, in front of the town, at the entrance of the portals, she cries out. She's spruiking in the most prominent places in town. On the heights where people can see her, beside the way where everyone must pass, beside the gates of the city where all the deals were done, and at the entrance where newcomers are about to enter. She speaks compellingly, uttering only true and righteous words. She urges hearers to take my instruction instead of silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold, for wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you desire cannot compare with her. Are you convinced yet? She goes on to say that she has royal associations. By her, kings reign and rulers decree what is just. Not only that, but she's associated with riches and honour, enduring wealth and prosperity. I walk in the way of righteousness, along the paths of justice, endowing with wealth those who love me and filling their treasuries. Wow, are you convinced yet? At this stage, I'm ready to get on board. My goodness, what a treasure trove of attributes this woman has. Who can resist the claims of woman wisdom? The other depiction of woman wisdom that I mentioned that chimes with this one is the famous one at the end of the book of Proverbs that I'm sure you've come across before. It's often called the capable wife. But that translation does not do justice either to the Hebrew or to the description of the book. She really is a woman of substance. That's a better translation, or a woman of valor. And like the woman wisdom of chapter 8, she too is a metaphor for wisdom. This woman is shown not just to be a capable home manager. We all know that we can do that. This woman puts her hand to food and textile production. She weaves fine cloth dyed in crimsons and purple. She deals in real estate. She buys fields and establishes vineyards. She's a trader. She barters in the marketplace. She's also a merchant selling fabrics out in the market. She's importing foodstuffs from other countries. She cares for all her servants, and she is always reaching out to the poor. I'm intrigued by the fact that, guided by God, the authors of this book have chosen to show wisdom as a woman. They were trying to persuade young men to adopt godly and prudent lives. That's what the book is about. So you might think that they'd use examples of successful men. But no, they choose images of successful women for their advertising campaign. Now, what's interesting is that I think they were drawing on women that they knew. Now, we tend to think of ancient Israel as a simple, rural, village-based environment, and for many centuries that was so. But in the period when this book was compiled, when all those sayings and those pieces were put together into a bound scroll, the book of Palestine was under Persian rule. And so these images of these women are actually images of elite Persian women. The Persian Empire had many towns. It was quite an urbanized setting, interconnected with communication and travel and trade. The Persians, for instance, were the first to have a post system where they could send messages out quickly because they had horses and riders stationed one day's ride from each other. And they were the origin of that post system that was adopted by Wells Fargo in the States and also by our own Cobb & Co. coaches here in Australia. The original of that was the Persian Empire, who did just that. Archaeology of the period has given us a reasonable sense of what households and towns looked like and what activities might have happened in them. And we know that ideas and goods and people flowed in and out of this Palestine from other parts of the Persian Empire, and including ideas about women that were a bit different. We know the Persian Empire had many powerful women. This is a statue of Artistone, the wife of King Darius I. Now, she owned and managed three estates in the region of Persepolis. And through her use of personal seals, those little clay objects with which she would seal her communications, we know that she communicated with supervisors on all her estates. She ordered large quantities of grain and wine and flour. She provided special grain rations for young mothers in her region and also for her workers. She provided travel rations for anyone who was travelling on her behalf throughout the empire. And it wasn't just royal women who worked. Non-royal women assisted with family businesses, managed properties, engaged in textile industries and worked in a variety of professions, including as supervisors of work groups and in administrative positions. And at the bottom of the pile, we know there are also slave women who presumably did things, everything that other people didn't want to do. So when the authors of this passage came to depict the ideal of wisdom, they chose the image of these successful women, and their respect for these women shows through. I think we women can take heart from these passages because they elevate the activities of women and tell us that the things that occupy women are theologically significant. It's no feminist manifesto, though. I think women are valued primarily because of what they contribute to the men of their households. The woman of chapter 31, for instance, is praised because her endeavours reflect well on her husband as he goes about his important life in the gate where judgments are made. Her wealth-generating activities allowed him more space for his own pursuits. Nevertheless, I personally take great heart from the fact that the labour of women, whether bartering in the marketplace, whether trading, whether just the sheer work of feeding and clothing a household, it's raised as a moral, as a model of moral and theological instruction for Israelite youth. And that is not to be gainsaid. So let's just return to chapter 8. I just want to pick up a bit more of what woman wisdom tells us about herself. At verse 22, which was the second part of the reading that Phyllis read, the poem, you may have noticed, takes an interesting direction. Wisdom tells us about her origins, where she came from, in case you want to know. And it turns out she has an outstanding pedigree. The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of long ago. Just think about that. The very first thing that God did at creation was to form wisdom and build it into the fabric of the earth. She goes on to say, "Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills I was brought forth, when he had not yet made earth and fields or the earth's first bits of soil, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth." So that's why there is the most astounding intricacy, order, beauty, and predictability in the created world. Wisdom was established at the inception of creation. Wisdom was written into the DNA of every part of it. At this stage, you may be jolted into remembering another little part of the Bible. Did it jolt your memory about John 1, that prologue to John's Gospel, where it says that the Word was with God in the beginning, that all things came into being through him, and without him was not one thing made that was made? So there's a mystery here, isn't there? Although wisdom is never presented as a god, she's always a created being, somehow wisdom is associated with Jesus, whom we know as the Word incarnate, who was with God in the beginning. Somehow wisdom and Jesus and God were somehow there at the beginning. I don't pretend to understand the detail of that. Now we come to a part of the declaration from Woman Wisdom that I find very moving. She says, "Then I was beside him like," it's either a little child or a master worker, the word is not clear in Hebrew, "and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race." So what image comes to your mind when you hear this description of God and wisdom at work in creation? When I was thinking about it and preparing this, I was thinking about skilled woodworkers in a beautiful workshop, working on some kind of project together, moving around, using tools, talking to one another, and then rejoicing with pride in the final product of their work. I've just finished reading a book called Willow Man about a craftsman who makes cricket bats, based on, I think, the story of someone who makes cricket bats, actually out in Kingsville, I think. I hadn't realised there was so much craftsmanship involved in making a cricket bat. You know, they can only be made from a particular kind of willow wood, a white willow, and there has to be sort of lumbered in a particular way, and the grain is carefully looked at, and the bat is, you know, just a lot of effort in shaping and oiling and creating this beautiful blade for the bat, working out where the weight is going to fall and so on. And then the handle spliced down into it and then bound with a single thread for the handle and then oiled and sanded, ready for the batter to use. There's so much, you know, so much involved in that beautiful craftsmanship of creating a cricket bat. Alternately, you can go down to Kmart and get a cheap one that'll never do the job as well. In fact, I think the Australian cricket team must have been using the Kmart model. So another image that came to mind as I was reading this is also about two gardeners digging and planting and shaping beds and setting up trellises and composting, working together to establish something beautiful and productive. I know that some of you are gardeners and that you take great pleasure in your gardening and establishing things that are beautiful. And another image that comes to mind as I think about God and wisdom creating this world is, you know, a sewing workshop with people working to make things out of beautiful fabrics. So, you know, I think you can insert your own illustration there, but I think the idea of God and wisdom working together is just that. It's just a beautiful image that I find really helpful. And I think that whenever we feel that satisfaction of accomplishing something good, something worthwhile, something beautiful, we're in touch with that divine wisdom that God's created, that God's embedded into the universe that we inhabit. And it delights, when we do that, it delights not just us, but God as well, who delights in the human race. There's that wonderful line in I can't think of the film of Eric Liddell, the great runner, the Olympic runner, who refused to run on the Sabbath day. A strong Christian who just loved to run, just a brilliant runner. And there's a line where he says, I love to run, and when I run, I can feel God's pleasure. So that lovely sense that God is delighting in our creativity and the things that we do as well. So as we finish, we've come a full circle now. We began our look at Proverbs last week where it wanted us to start. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And we end today with a look at the scenes behind that vast divine workshop where God and wisdom are at work creating our world. So just to summarise what I think we might have learnt over the last 2 weeks. One is that the material stuff of this universe is invested with wisdom, life-giving, humanity-affirming wisdom. I've learnt that we have the freedom to explore and investigate this world and that God's pleased when we do that. I've learnt that we become what God wants by learning, by listening to others and by heeding the cry of those in need. I've learned that this world invites wonder, awe, astonishment, gratitude, and praise. And I've learned finally that God delights in us and in the created world. And in fact, as we affirm often from our New Testament, in the words of John. God so loved this world that he sent his Son, Jesus, to redeem it and us. There is no greater proof of divine wisdom than that. Shall we pray? Lord, as we gaze in wonder and awe at the world that you've made, we respond with gratitude and praise that you've given us so much. May we leave here today renewed in our love of you, renewed in our call to learn and listen, renewed in our commitment to work with you in making the world a better place for all. And above all, may we enjoy you forever. In your Son's name, whose life, death, and resurrection perfectly reflects your love. Amen.